everyone. You're listening to the second episode of the Hot Dogs and Caviar podcast. My name is Jesse Sutton. My partner is Nate Whiting. We are two Charleston, South Carolina chefs, currently furloughed due to the obnoxious pandemic situation. And to pass our time, we have begun discussing culinary topics on the internet. You know, like reasonable people. If you listened to our first episode, we told you that we were going to start every episode with a funny restaurant story. And if you listened to the end of the first episode, you heard us hyping the situation where we were going to tell the story of when I stabbed Nate. So, Nate, why don't you go ahead and tell the story of the time I stabbed you?
Oh, gladly. The time you viciously attacked me. So, we were working together at the Woodlands, and Jesse was sent out to the garden to go retrieve some garnish or herbs or whatever it was. And I decided, as my playful self usually does, decided to give Jesse a little jolt. So I stalked him as he went outside. And as he was coming back in, I crouched below the double doors. And as he was coming to the doors, I sprang up from below and tried to scare him. And he stabbed me viciously because he was so angry at me. How's that?
That's one way of putting it.
I think that's pretty accurate. I think you were just so furious with me that I scared you again. Decided to jab your knife into my body.
Let's discuss. First off, it was your hand. And second off, let's discuss that again. All right.
So it was my wrist, and you could have done some serious damage.
I would have had to work a lot harder. Nate loves scaring people, and he's the best at it that I've ever seen. There was one situation where he was in the walk-in and had climbed up to a shelf that a high shelf, like head high, that your back is to as you walk into the walk-in. And what he was doing was, as people walked into the walk-in, screaming and throwing lemons at them and scaring the hell out of them. And then when they turned around, like, red-faced and shaking, and yelled at him like, "Ah, Nate! Ah, God damn it!" He would say, "Now pay it forward." And the only way to make yourself feel better was to go back out into the kitchen and send someone else into the walk-in on some trumped-up mission.
Yep, just send in your next victim.
And so
I spun my web, and I trapped the unsuspecting flies, and then after I had my fun with them, I had them bring me more prey.
I want to clarify that this is a five-star, five-diamond restaurant, Relais Gourmand. But apparently the executive sous chef had time for things like this. And it did not stop when he ascended to executive chef. It actually just got worse. The best one was when the mighty Logan, this coworker of ours that looked exactly like Conan the Barbarian, except he was like 5'8", he was victimized by the walk-in trick, and it looked like his head was going to explode. It was probably the best thing that's ever happened. This big, gigantic, strapping man just reduced to a quivering jelly by Nate's expert prank.
He was so terrified, and then I was so terrified I thought he was going to pull me apart like the Scarecrow in the Wizard of Oz.
And he easily could if he decided to.
Yeah, oh yeah.
All right, but anyway, so I went out to the garden to get some herbs with a paring knife, one of those little kiwi ones they sell at the Asian store with the red handle. You know, the ones that are absolutely lightsaber sharp the day you buy them, but like 6 days later the edge is gone forever, and because it's stainless it's almost impossible to get back. But for a week you have an incredibly razor sharp paring knife for like $3. So anyway, I went out and cut my herbs with my little paring knife. I was walking back in with my knife pointed blade down, as one does when one is walking through a kitchen. I opened the door to the back, come back into the kitchen, and Nate sprang up at me with both palms up saying, "Wah!" and jumped right at me and put his hand directly into the blade of my knife. So he staggered back and looked at his hand, and he was bleeding. I was in the middle of saying something like, "Oh, Nate, what the hell?" And he yells, he stabbed me! He effing stabbed me!" And so, no, Nate, that's not entirely accurate, is it? Like, did I stab you, or were you horsing around like a moron? but everybody jumped right on his side. Everyone was like, "Jesse, why'd you stab Nate? All he did was scare you." And eventually,
because I'm the fun one.
Yeah, right. You're the fun one.
No, not really. Okay. So people used to call us Bert and Ernie. Yeah. I was definitely not Ernie.
Yeah. It was definitely Bert.
But I do enjoy a good prank.
Despite the fact that he has the reputation of being a taciturn and somewhat humorless taskmaster in the kitchen. However, on the other hand, he is absolutely an inveterate prank demon. So I tip my hat. And the best part is when someone is an inveterate prank demon, it can be hard to prank them because they're always, always on the lookout. Like I remember at Tristan, they stuffed little Chrissy inside the Alto Sham. And then they told Nate that something was wrong with the Alto Sham. And he smelled a rat because he saw everybody standing in a semicircle around the Alto Sham. So he walked up and just turned it on and said, "No, there's not." That was cold-blooded.
Yeah, that was great. I don't know. I still don't know how she was. She is a tiny, tiny little girl. And like, I do not know how she got in that thing.
She's like 5'2", and she weighs like 90 pounds.
Yeah, but still, that was impressive.
That was an act of contortionism on her part and an act of just cold-blooded awesomeness on your part. So anyway, there you go. This is what five-star, five-diamond chefs do.
It happens everywhere from your local diner to the white tablecloth local establishment. I don't know.
even at really busy places where there's just not time for that kind of stuff, we make time for that kind of stuff.
You have to.
It's too high pressure a situation. If you're not throwing pies at each other or setting each other on fire or scaring the hell out of each other, then there's just no point.
Yeah, exactly. Filling tart shells with scallop mousse. Like, come on.
Oh my God. My worst tart shell ever was filled with glucose syrup and black sesame seeds for shrapnel. Topped with a thin layer of whipped cream. It was like getting punched in the face because glucose syrup is really dense. Second off, when the dude took his hand away, the pie tin just stayed there. Move.
That's spectacular.
That was John Peters at Trio. John, I hope you're listening, you jackass. All right, well, let's move on into the topic. If you took a look at the tagline for this episode, you'll see that our topic today is 10 fast and easy pasta dishes, which sounds alarmingly like something from Food and Wine magazine, but the similarities end there. We are going to take you through how to make 10 of our favorite pasta dishes, none of which is going to take longer than a half an hour to throw together. And the key here is that they're going to be easy, but they're not going to be just gimmies. They're all going to require sound fundamentals. They're going to require you to think about pasta and how it's prepared. And by the end of it, if you cook even a few of these, you'll have a much stronger understanding of the proper way to put a pasta dish together. And then at the end, the last two of our 10, the first 8 are pretty traditional, but the last two are going to be some original ideas that Dayton and I had and adapted and worked with and played with. So a little more playful. So if you listen to the end, you'll hear some pasta dishes that are not exactly standard, but in the beginning, they're very much going to be pieces from the classic canon. Nate, are you ready to do this?
I'm ready to do it.
First, we're going to take you through some technical information. Nate Whiting taught me, at the time, everything I knew about Italian cuisine. And since then, I've branched out and I've read some books. But when I came to him, I was starting at zero. I knew how to make spaghetti and meatballs American style with very little knowledge of how a pasta dish actually comes together. And Nate is definitely the guru in that department. He definitely was my mentor in the department of pasta. So when it comes to talking about pasta, I'm going to kick it over to him. We're going to structure this like a Q&A. I'm going to ask Nate a few questions about pasta, about how it's prepared. Speaking mostly in generalizations, these are things that you can take to most pasta dishes. Nate's going to answer point by point, and we're all going to learn together. All right, first off, Nate, let's talk about how to select pasta, what to buy, where to buy it, what to look for. Take it away.
Ready?
Yep, ready.
All right, so pasta buying, what to select and what to look for. Well, you want to look for ingredients that start with whole durum wheat. Those are going to be your best go-to choices. It's really, really that simple. You want to look for 100% durum wheat. It's going to give you the best flavor, the best texture, the best elasticity and plasticity when it's cooked. Those are definitely things you want to look for. Most, if not all, dried pasta is just flour and water, and you want to start with good flour. Next, you want to look for pastas that are extruded from brass dies. Many, if not all, commercial brands, there's better ways to do things, you know, as industry and, you know, mechanical processes improve, there's going to be better materials like stainless steel and Teflon and things like that, that are going to help push that pasta through the die and the extruder a lot faster. But that's not always the best way. You want to look for ones that are bronze die extruded. What the bronze die does is it creates these tiny little, not microscopic, but you can almost see them, little ridges in the extrusion of the dough. And that's going to give it a little bit of texture, a little bit of coarseness and grit as it dries. And then the key to that is when it, after it dries, it's going to help grab that sauce.
So it's like roughing up a piece of wood with sandpaper before you glue it.
Exactly. Perfectly said, my friend. It's like roughing up the sandpaper with the sandpaper. And, you know, the old world style, it takes longer. It's more expensive. They break, they bend, but it's still the best way. Sometimes the old way is still the best.
For sauce adhesion, look for a bronze dye pasta. Is there any way of telling just by looking that it's bronze dye extruded?
Usually you can see the coarseness on each noodle. If you look at it, like most good brands, or especially the artisanal brands, they'll have a little like viewing window in the box. You can actually see the coarseness. It's not just like it's been sanded with like semolina or extra flour. That's usually the grit you see on each the piece of the pasta, and you can feel it. Just take it, and if you can touch it, even better, just kind of draw it through your fingers, and you'll feel that grit, kind of like rubbing a face after not shaving for a day or two.
And I would like to interject here that the really artisanal pasta is more expensive, but more expensive than cheap is still pretty cheap. Like, let's say the nice version is twice as expensive as the cheap version, and you're buying a ribeye. That's an outlay. That's splashing out. But if the slightly nicer version of the pasta is $7 instead of $3.50, that's two dinners. That's not that big a deal. Go for it.
Right. It's still pasta. It's still cheap. Even the grocery store brands are still pretty awesome. There's some really good ones which we can get into. You don't have to go artisanal, but even the artisanal pastas, it's still pasta. It's pretty cheap. Like you were saying, it's not, we're talking, you know, choice and prime ribeye difference.
Well, let's say you're at a grocery store that's not a downtown Charleston or a downtown Chicago or a New York City grocery store. Let's say you're at a grocery store that's, you know, out in Ladson or someplace. What of the main brand pastas would be your go-to?
That's a really easy question. Like, DiCecco needs to be your everyday pasta. It is the best commercial, industrially made pasta on the market. There is no question about it. Like, they mill their own flour. They're actually millers. They mill it right there at the factory before they extruded into pasta. They have their own spring waters. They dry it slow. They don't rush it. The way they dry it, it takes almost 40 hours.
Does DiCecco use bronze dye?
They use bronze dye for everything, which is really unheard of for commercially made pastas. They dry everything for 40 hours, which is really unheard of. There are such more efficient and faster ways to do it, but if you heat it up and you go too fast, it affects the quality of the final pasta. So they don't cut any corners. They let it dry. Filippo DiCecco actually invented the way to dry it indoors back in the 1800s, which is pretty cool. The old way was to do it out in the sunlight, which is really unhygienic. So he figured out a way to do it indoors, which is pretty cool.
Keep the flies off it.
Yeah, exactly. They're the originals, and they haven't really changed much.
I will admit right now that I was underhanding you one, because I've worked with you for a million years and been told to order DiCecco pasta if I couldn't get something nicer a million times.
Yeah, there's DiCecco is great, and it'll stand up to most artisanal pastas just fine. Like, are there better? Absolutely. But are there worse? Way worse. There's way worse. You can just feel how smooth and glassy they are, how brittle, how they shatter. You can tell by the color of the water when you cook it. It gets all cloudy and murky, and you can do a lot worse.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Can you do better? Yeah. Can you do worse? Oh, yes.
Well, it's funny. You talked about it going through a bronze dye. The reason I asked is because I actually didn't know, because DiCecco doesn't look as dusty on the outside as some of the nicer ones. So I feel like there's a certain amount of compromise that's being made there. It seems like they're giving away some of their structure, some of their sauce grab structure for industrialization, but they appear to have retained some of it. So I feel like DiCecco is kind of a compromise between, if you're going to get something super cheap like Muller or Barilla, versus if you're going to go all the way up and get Rusticello d'Abruzzo, DiCecco is an acceptable compromise between the two if you're stuck at a grocery store in Leeds in South Carolina.
100%. Well said, my friend. And it's really not even that big of a compromise. Like, Italians eat that every day, you know, and that's one of their go-tos for sure. DiCecco is the way to go if you need it, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. And you do need it. You need pasta more often than you're going to go to the nice gourmet store.
100%.
Although I would advise anyone, if you happen to find yourself in a Dean and DeLuca or at Eataly or someplace like that, some fancy pants gourmet store, just check out the pasta section. Whatever else you're there grabbing, grab some dry pasta. You'd be surprised at how great dry pasta can get.
Yeah, I'm a huge defender of dried pasta. I have been for my whole life. Like, a lot of chefs and people think of it as an afterthought. It's just dried pasta, fresh. So everyone's always banging the fresh drum, but dried pasta is as good, if not better, for a lot of dishes than fresh pasta.
Absolutely. I sit down to a plate of fresh pasta, and first off, if the fresh pasta isn't executed exactly perfectly, it's garbage.
Yep.
And second off, it's like frozen French fries. Like, fresh pasta, a fresh pasta dish, is the window to get it done perfectly is tiny. Whereas with dried pasta, it's not as apt to turn to paste if you have to let it sit for an extra 30 seconds.
Yeah, you have so much more of a window of gray area. And also to sauce it correctly, like saucing it correctly in the sauce, like after it's cooked, like, you're not going to, you have more of a window to let it absorb.
And not for nothing, the texture's nicer. Like, fresh pasta is great and all, but you don't get that al dente chew the way you get with like a Rusticello spaghetti lunghi.
Mm-hmm.
Which is,
you really don't.
Rusticello d'Abruzzo is, for my money, the best dried pasta I've found. It's hard to find. It's more expensive, but if you can get a hold of it, they make a long spaghetti that is absolutely terrific.
I totally agree. It's definitely one of my top brands for sure. Like, I love Rusticello.
All right. For my next question, once again, this is something you've already taught me, but I'm going to let you drive. Why don't you take me through how to boil pasta the old way? How much salt, how much water, how much pasta? Where do you set your timer? What do you look for doneness?
Okay. So cooking pasta the traditional way, what you want to do is you want to get about roughly a liter or a quart for every, 100 grams. So you're going to cook a box of pasta. It's usually a pound. So you want a little over a gallon of water. So the old rule of thumb is 10,000. All of the metric system. So you want about 10 grams of salt for every 100 grams of pasta and 1,000 grams or 1 liter of water. Now, does anyone ever measure that? No. Have I? Yes. Cause I'm a nerd. I wanted to try it and, see how it, the old adage is, how it's supposed to taste. But salty like the sea is not the case for pasta, your pasta water. For blanching vegetables, yeah, you probably want it more like seawater. I tell people your pasta water should taste like a really well-seasoned soup. It should taste like it's just enough saltiness to know that it's seasoned, but not be like you're tasting the ocean. What do you say, Jesse? How do you?
I absolutely am in line with that. I think that when we all learned about big pot blanching and we all started blanching vegetables with a cup and a half of salt in a gallon of water.
Yeah.
You sort of get in the habit of doing that. And the first time you do that with a pot of noodles, you realize that that was not the thing to do. Because unlike vegetables, noodles are extremely absorbent. They're sponges. Like, for instance, weigh a green bean before and after it's cooked. It weighs about the same. Mm-hmm. Weigh a noodle before and after it's cooked, and it's a lot heavier. It's sucked in all that liquid. So
it's almost double.
You need to watch the salt. The salt needs to be palatable to eat with a spoon. And not that you just want to eat salt water, but if you were eating water soup, that's how it should be seasoned.
That's one of my biggest things. Like, I teach everyone, and a lot of people don't do this, is taste your pasta water, taste it throughout the night, taste it throughout the, especially in restaurants.
Oh yeah.
Taste your pasta water. Like, I know I look like a weirdo when I do it, but salty water, it will ruin your dish so quickly. And I know a lot of great chefs and Italian chefs that don't even bother salting their pasta water, because as it cooks and it goes throughout the night and you keep using it and refilling it, like, the ebbs and flows just aren't worth the risk reward. And also, they're control freaks like me and want more control in the end anyways. So they just kind of adjust with their saucing and finishing the dish.
But you don't advocate that, that method?
For home? Nah, I put a little bit in there just because it tastes good.
Absolutely. What you said about restaurant work is extremely true. If you've got a pot of pasta water going all the time, it is a skill all by itself, not having anything to do with cooking, of just maintaining your pasta water. As the water content drops, that causes the salt content and the starch content to spike. Starch content, that being as you're using your pasta water, and knowing when to add more water, when to crank the heat, when to start over. It's a complicated game. And it's just like anything else in the kitchen. Every station isn't just one skill, it's many skills. And that's a skill that not a lot of people have a chance to get used to.
Absolutely. It's a balancing act, as you just said. And if you're lucky enough to work in a restaurant that has a pasta boiler, like, they're great. But even those with the self-filling and self-draining, like, from the time service starts, by the time it ends, let's just say it's a lot, that water's a lot different.
It's all milky and foamy.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah.
Well, do you believe in any circumstances in oiling your pasta water?
I'm not completely opposed to oiling your pasta water. Like, I think it can help, like, from boiling over, just by the density differential, a little oil on the surface of the water will help keep it from boiling over on you a little bit.
Breaks up the surface tension.
Exactly. And yep. But do I think it helps? Do I think it really matters? Not really. I mean, if you're using good pasta, that's going to matter more than putting a little oil in your water. Generally, I'd say it's just a waste of oil. If it makes you feel good, go for it.
Well, how about, and once again, this is an underhand, I just want to hear what he says. How about cooking pasta in advance?
Oh, a lot of places do this. I've had to do it before, and it's just a matter of real estate and balancing the pasta water and all that. So if you got to do it ahead, you got to do what you got to do. Like, the old adage in restaurant cooking is, you know, good mise en place and bain is better than anything done sloppy a la minute. So if you can have it at 80, 90% throughout the night, and that's how it's got to be, take that. Don't go for the ebbs and flows. Don't try to hit the home run when you're going to strike out three other times.
Fascinating. Where was this attitude when I was going down every single night on saute at the Woodlands?
That was different. No, but I've had to in the past, and you know, sometimes you got to do what you got to do. When you do it ahead of time, the quality of your pasta is the ball game. If you're not using really good stuff, you're going to have a mess. It's going to be mushy and limp and flavorless.
Do you have any hints as far as the proper way to get ahead on pasta, as far as how much or how little you cook it or oiling it or anything like that?
So if you're going to do it ahead of time, my rules of thumb are, I generally subtract like 3 to 4 minutes off the time of the box, whatever it says, just as a general rule. Cook it by that time, and then lift it out if you can, rather than draining it, so you're not pouring all the starchy water off of it and like rinsing it too much. Lift it out and spread it out on a pan, and then let it cool without shocking it. Don't shock it if you can avoid that at all.
Okay. Oil or no oil?
That depends on the shape and this, you know, the final application. Like, a little oil might be necessary if you're like cooking off lasagna sheets and you don't want like a brick of pasta sheets, might a little oil might help keeping them from sticking. But if you got something short like Trophée or Stracciatella or something like that, and you can avoid it, by all means. But a little glossing of oil is, you know, I guess it's acceptable if that's what the road you got to go down.
Well, the argument against oiling that I've always heard was that it can hurt with sauce adhesion.
Yes.
When you come putting it back together. But the way I like to get around that is you just dunk the pasta back in the water. Because a lot of oil will get washed off by the boiling water, even just for 5 seconds. Just make it hot again, get the oil off, and then pull it back out. There may be a little oil lingering on there, but not much. And then you can throw it into your pasta pan and finish it from there.
Yep. So these are all going to like get down to nuances and stylistic choices and all that. Dunking it back in the water certainly works. A lot of, you know, old school stalwarts are going to say, you know, pasta only touches the water once. So if you take it and then you got your cold pasta, and if it's granular enough where it's not going to be like a massive like starch bomb and into your sauce, and you can move it around a little, heat it right up in your sauce. But then again, if you have it oiled, so it's all relative.
It's all trade-offs.
Yeah.
Cooking pasta at home, pasta is great home cooked food because you really can gun for perfection, and it's not that hard. It's one of the times where making it at home is actually easier than making it in a restaurant.
Oh yeah, for sure. It's so much easier, and the timing of it, like it all, if there's a pasta station at that restaurant, all the timing is going off that pasta station. If that ravioli is ready in 7 minutes, everything else better be ready in 7 minutes.
You know what I think is funny is that if you're at a restaurant and the pasta station is an easy station, then you can bet that the pastas probably aren't very good. And if a pasta station is a complete ball buster, then you can tell that's a serious Italian restaurant.
Oh, absolutely. If there's a pasta station in the restaurant, that's the busiest station in the restaurant. Unless, as you just said, if it's not the busiest, it probably sucks.
Right. Dunk pasta, pour on plate, ladle sauce over, add garnish, right, and go. If you're right, ladling sauce on top of noodles, you are most definitely doing it wrong.
Yes.
All right. Absolutely. So how long do you cook the pasta? How do you get that al dente?
Getting an al dente, so obviously it's gonna vary. You're gonna have your quality is the number one of the pasta. That's gonna really be the biggest mitigating factor of like how well the chew is gonna be in the final process of it. You can go by timing. Just taste it again. I go by taste, because every brand, everything, there's gonna be so many different mitigating factors. It's gonna go down to BTU, how much water you got.
You're talking about timing. Answer me this. And once again, this is a softball. Correct me if I'm wrong here, but if you cook the pasta till it's al dente in the pasta water, by the time you get it incorporated into the sauce and garnish, it's going to be over, correct?
Generally, yeah. So what you want to do is when you're cooking your pasta, what I do is I usually shave off about 2 minutes of the recommended time. And those recommended times are usually pretty dialed in for like al dente, right out of the water. Like for Americans, like how most Americans would just pull the pasta out of the water and ladle some sauce on the top of it. So shave off about 2 minutes and spend that last 2-3 minutes in your sauce, finishing it up, letting it absorb, grab. And then that's where those bronze dyes and that grip is really going to come into play. And then the pasta sauce's best friend is always going to be your pasta water. Save a little bit of that water, and it's going to help grab that sauce and help adhesion and get that right balance of sauce to pasta ratio, which you're looking for. And my general rule of thumb for that is kind of think of it as like you're dressing a salad. Like it's about the pasta, not the sauce. Just think of it as your sauce is like a dressing, just lightly coat and, you know, get every noodle and then get a little bit of sauce with every bite.
Yeah, absolutely. That is one of the things about the way Americans do pasta that just bewilders me is that a plate of noodles undressed with a huge ladle of bolognese over the top. I mean, that's nice. And if you give it to me, I'm not going to complain, but it's closer to a chili mac from Skyline than it is from an actual Italian pasta dish. I think that finishing the pasta in the pan with the garnish and the sauce is the unsung hero of the pasta game. I actually had a friend, an Italian-American, first-generation American, who I lived with in college, and he called me a couple of weeks ago asking how he could make his pasta sauces thicker. And I asked him how he was finishing it, and he wasn't finishing it like that, and it blew his mind. He started finishing it, his same sauces as before, but started finishing them in the pan with the pasta. And he called me back and was like, I can't believe how well this works. I don't know why I didn't know this. I wanted to be like, dude, your dad's from Rome. I don't know why you didn't know it either. But, you know, I couldn't say that. That was rude.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy, like, how much gets lost over the ocean and the translation, and even less than a generation can just lose a lot of those tricks. But that's where, in my mind, that's where the Italians get it right, and how restaurants generally get it right is saucing it in the pan properly.
All right. So when we were discussing this podcast and going over our outline, Nate blew my mind a little bit. And he has a new way of cooking pasta that has nothing to do with a big pot of boiling water. So Nate, I actually am learning this in real time because we've only discussed this briefly. So why don't you tell me about cooking pasta like risotto, because that is fascinating and I'm going to try it tomorrow for dinner.
All right. Well, it's not new. And like I said, I'm no authority. I do have some expertise, but I'm not an authority on the matter. But I learned this technique probably 15, almost 20 years ago from an article in the New York Times by Alain Ducasse, the famous French chef. Go figure. But he's definitely one of my idols. And he talked about how he learned how to cook pasta. Well, actually, let me add this as a caveat. It has to be dried pasta. This will not work. I repeat, will not work with fresh pasta. You will have a terrible, terrible mess on your hands. So it has to be dried pasta. So he learned this from small family farms in Liguria. And it's a really great way to cook smaller formatted pasta shapes. What you do is you essentially cook it like risotto. So what you do is you take one pan and you heat it up just like you're cooking a risotto. You add a little fat, olive oil or butter. Then you can add some aromatics or seasonings to the butter to make it, you know, flavorful. Add some pasta to it and lightly toast it. Get it aromatic. And then you add your hot liquid. I usually just use water. It's
what you would have cooked the pasta with otherwise if you were doing it the old way. So this is not like it's a cheat.
Exactly. You can use stock, absolutely. But I generally just use unsalted water, just so I can have more control of the salt content by the end. But you just keep adding it ladle by ladle, and stir until it gets nice and creamy and beautiful. It takes about the same amount of time, as it would to boil it, other than having to wait for the water to boil first. Really logical technique if you think about it. And if you can, you know, abstain from the emotions of tradition, it's truly fantastic. And then the beauty of it is you have that beautiful, starchy, concentrated pasta water that you would have before already in and coating your pasta. And then you add your sauce in your sauce work.
I cannot wait to try this. I can't overemphasize how cool I think that technique is, just as far as reserving all of that starch, like all the milkiness that's in pasta water when the pasta is done cooking. There's no reason that doesn't have to glaze the pasta itself.
It's so fantastic. It's like being able, like if you're working at a restaurant that serves lots of pasta, it's like being able to fast forward to like the last hour of service and having that really, really starchy pasta water you've been using all night in one go of it. It's so fantastic. And you can just see the starchy glaze that's all over the pasta just grab that sauce like a champion. It's spectacular. It's a great hack. It's fast. You only have one pot to clean up. There's so many advantages. And like I was saying before, if you can remove yourself from the emotion and the traditions of cooking it in big pots, there's a lot of advantages.
I mean, I think that removing oneself from tradition is kind of the trick when it comes to Italian cooking. But we Americans have never had a problem with that so far. And I think this one time it would be us doing that for the forces of good instead of evil.
Absolutely. And we're going to put the link up to the article on the blog. We're going to have the recipe for this, how to do it. It's more of a technique. It's super easy. Just the main thing is just start with good pasta. Chef Ducasse swears that you can't use longer formats. This is where I disagree with him. I do it all the time. I use spaghetti. I use bucatini. I use linguine. You just need to be a little more vigilant in the beginning when it's starting to, you know, stick a little bit, but just keep working through it and it'll be fine. Trust me.
Do you just, when you're doing a long pasta, do you just not stir it until it loosens up a little bit? You just ladle over and let it cook down, ladle over and let it cook down. And then,
yeah, I just kind of flutter it and agitate it lightly, just kind of back and forth. Just try to get the water in between the strands.
So you don't get the big log.
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
It still sounds like it's easier with small pasta, having never done it once.
It's way easier with shorter formats, like start with some penne or something. As far as cooking it risotto style and adding little bit by little bit, you don't even need to do that. If you get the ratio right, which we'll put on the blog, you can flood it right in the beginning and just kind of add all the water you're going to need right in the beginning and just kind of let it simmer and reduce down and just keep stirring it.
Well, that's handy.
That works just as well, almost even better. And it's super fast.
And what that makes me think is that even if you don't have your ratio dialed in, like if you, let's say you had some pasta that you didn't really know.
Right.
Start off with a little more water just so you're not just sitting it constantly. You want to get a, you know, you want to get a step away for 30 seconds. You can give it a cup or something instead of a ladleful and just let that come down. That's a great thought.
100%. You can flood it from the beginning, or you want to start with, you know, two or three extra scoops of water or ladles or whatever you're using. Go for it. All the better. And it's just going to give you that much more of a margin of error. Like I've seen almost no difference. It is spectacular. There's a really great method by Kenji Lopez. We're going to put on the blog too. He goes into that in great detail and how he was almost tarred and feathered at an Italian food conference for talking about doing this. It's pretty funny.
Italians get feisty when you...
They don't like that at all.
What I think is funny is that, like, to the Italians I've met, the way they make food 20 miles down the road is sacrilege. So anything that we do is guaranteed rage fuel.
Oh, yeah. They don't even like each other. But like I said, if you're going to flood it from the beginning and kind of like shallow boil it, if you will, you almost braise it. Like, don't sweat it. If it looks a little runny, just pour some off. No problemo. It's just like you'd be draining your pasta from a big pot. It's so really remarkable.
That seems like it might be a rescue move because you'd lose some of that starch. So it's less than ideal, right?
Right. But better than a watery tomato sauce, I would say.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair point.
Point taken. All right. You do lose some, but it's still starchier than it would be if you used, you know, if you brought up a gallon and a half of water.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that makes sense. That all makes sense. I'm definitely trying that out. I'll put pictures of it up on the companion blog post. All right. Well, Mr. Dog, are you prepared to go into the individual dishes?
I am prepared. You ready, buddy?
I am ready. I'm going to start. Before we start, did you have anything else you wanted to like try to throw in about how to cook pasta? I feel like you've been pretty exhaustive.
A key to the passodo technique is just pay attention, but it's also one of the best parts. It's like participation at every step. You're not just standing around twiddling your thumbs, waiting for the water to boil, then standing around staring at the clock, waiting for the pasta to boil and pull it and sauce it. Like, you're participating the whole way. You get to taste, adjust, and it's one of the best things about cooking is just kind of being able to flow, like, you know, in a jazz band, just kind of weave in and out and taste and adjust, and, you know, I think it's beautiful.
Oh, absolutely. That was a charmingly dorky analogy.
I am a dork.
Well, I mean, so am I, and so is anyone that's listening to this podcast. Let's be real. All right, at this point, Nate and I have each come up with 5 fast, easy pasta dishes. 4 ultra traditional and 1 kind of off the wall. So we are going to take turns taking you through our pasta dishes, explaining how to make them. We are not going to give recipes on the air. That would be unwieldy. You'd have to stand there with a pen copying everything down. Instead, you can go to hotdogsandcaviar.blogspot.com, and there is going to be a companion post to this episode that has all the recipes with photos, links to the articles Nate talked about, basically everything that you might need from this episode, all right in front of you. So when you're ready, you can go check that out and make yourself some excellent pasta. All right, we're moving on into the recipes now. So I'm going to start. These recipes are going to move from the simplest to the most complex. Now, every time we do a recipe, we're also going to be giving you notes on ingredients. Now, ingredients are important in any cuisine, but they're especially important in pasta dishes because pasta dishes are usually pretty simple. There's not a whole lot of different ingredients going on, and the fewer ingredients there are in something, the more important the quality of the ingredient is. Like, consider a fresh peach. It's one ingredient, one thing. If the peach isn't perfect, it's not worth eating. We're going to be doing dishes with three and four, maybe five ingredients. So the quality of every single one of those ingredients is absolutely, absolutely paramount. So for every dish, we're also going to give you notes on sourcing. Now, we've already given in episode one, we've already given you all the notes we can give you on how to source pasta. But we're going to be talking about all the other ingredients and how much they matter. All right. So the first pasta dish that I'm going to take you all through, I don't have a snappy Italian name for it, but I call it ABC pasta. That's just shorthand for anchovy butter chili, which are the three ingredients in this pasta other than the pasta itself. So while the pasta is cooking, you don't need to get ahead of this one. This is if you're doing a traditional boiled pasta. While the pasta is cooking, foam some butter, just like a knob of butter, and then drain a small can of anchovies, one of those little 2 ounce cans, packed in oil, not packed in tomato sauce. You drain the anchovies and just throw them in the butter, mash them around with a wooden spoon. The anchovies will almost dissolve. I mean, they won't exactly dissolve. There'll still be little bits, but they definitely won't maintain their structural integrity. So you'll have this big, glorious smelling butter anchovy cloud of steam in your face. Now, when it comes to butter, I would go unsalted because with anchovies, especially anchovies in this amount, you really want to control your salt. So for your butter, doesn't have to be fancy butter, just good, fresh, unsalted butter. For the anchovies, just regular oil pack anchovies. This is not the time to go get some expensive boccarones. This isn't the time to splash out for some really nice Sicilian anchovies. Just the regular King Oscar anchovies from the grocery store or Cento, they'll do just fine. So you've got anchovies foaming in butter and then a quick shake of chili flake. And I mean just pizza place chili flake. Once again, nothing special, nothing fancy. This one's easy. And not a lot of chili flake either. When you shake it into the hot butter, it'll really take over. And real Italian food is never really spicy. Even dishes like pasta alla arrabbiata, which means angry pasta, it's made with chili, but it's not that hot. So you're not looking for burning habanero heat. You're just looking for a little warmth. So you've got your anchovies, butter and chili flakes foaming away. They're nice and aromatic. Your pasta's done. Lift the pasta water out with a pasta dipper or a strainer, whatever's convenient. Drop it into the anchovy butter and toss it around. It should bring some of its water with it. That water will hit the butter and it'll go from greasy to almost creamy. Now, you're not looking for it to be swimming in sauce. With only a little knob of butter, this is for cooking maybe a half pound or even a whole pound of pasta. Once again, the exact ratios will be on the website, but you're not looking for it to be swimming in butter. You're looking for it to have just enough butter and anchovy and chili flake to glaze the pasta to get it nicely coated. With maybe a little slick left in the bowl, but you don't want piles of butter left in the bowl. If that happens, you've done too much pasta water, too much sauce. So you just want your sauce just glazed. Taste it for salt. You might not need any more salt, depending on your anchovies and depending on how much salt was in your pasta water. It may be salty enough right now. Anchovies are extremely highly seasoned. But if it needs a little salt, give it a pinch. If you want a little bit more chili flake in there, don't be afraid to give it another shake, but it might be safer to just serve chili flake on the table. This pasta, three ingredients, that's all you need. Super elemental, super clean. If you want to have Parmigiano or Pecorino on the table for dusting it with, that's fine, but it's really not necessary, and it kind of tramples the delicate flavor chord. This pasta is one of the simplest and most elemental dishes I know how to make, and it's also one of my absolute favorite foods. Although my psychotic passion for anchovies is a matter of public record, so perhaps that's not that much of a surprise.
I love it, man. I love the ABC pasta. Hey, Jesse, so is there a brand of butter you recommend, or like we want to talk about some butter?
Well, actually, for butter, the brand I recommend, I like to reach out for something nicer, like a higher fat content, like Plougras or Kerrygold. Although, once again, if you're making this anchovy pasta, I tend to buy my nice butter salted for toast. So like I'll have, you know, President or Kerrygold or something, but that'll be salted butter for toast. I keep cheaper butter for unsalted because I just use it for baking and stuff like that. this is a one where you'd want to reach out for your unsalted butter. Having said that, if you can find a European grocery in your town, any kind of European grocery, whether it's French or we have an Eastern European grocery, like a Russian grocery store that has great butter, find some imported butter. If you can find some imported unsalted butter, that's absolutely a great choice. But in this particular pasta, it doesn't make a ton of difference. If you're making a butter sauce, like an emulsified butter sauce, that's one thing. But because you're cooking it out to the point where it breaks anyway, the fat content of the butter is not super sensitive.
Awesome, man.
I mean, I just use Land O'Lakes. Like, this is one of those times where just regular, just unsalted butter works just fine because you're adding so much salt to it.
But I totally agree, man. And like, I'm a big fan of the Kerrygold. I use that a lot, you know, it's talking, good. Yeah, just talking like, you know, commercially, you know, retail available, Kerrygold, President.
Occasionally you can find President, but President butter that I've seen in stores is almost always salted. And it's actually not just salted, it's highly mm-hmm. salted. So you don't really want to mess with that for this dish, but I love President butter.
Yeah, it's really good. And I use Costco butter all the time, and especially it's fine. It's just like Land O'Lakes.
Yeah. I mean, I like a lot it's of Costco cheap. Products. My stereotype of Costco before my wife became a member was that it was cheap crap. Like, I don't know if I was equating it with Sam's Club in my head, but now their meat department is excellent. Their fruit department is excellent. Their wine is no joke. They have chanterelles. Like,
yep.
It's a, if y'all haven't checked out Costco, you should. If you're into restaurant cooking or if you're into high-end cooking, Costco is a good resource.
Yeah, I like a lot of their Kirkland brands. I like their Kirkland olive oil too. That's like my go-to, you know, ubiquitous oil. It's delicious.
Oh, yeah. Every time I say I use olive oil in any of these dishes, I'm talking Costco olive oil. It's perfectly good. I mean, once again, there are nice olive oils, like what we call finishing oils in the world. I know Nate's partial to several. Who's your Italian go-to for finishing oil?
There's so many. I love Ligurian olive oils. There's so many.
I know we've been culty.
About we're not Armando. Talking about those.
I know we've been culty about Armando Mani in the past. I really like.
Yeah, Armando Mani. Absolutely.
I really like Castellas out of Provence, but
Terra Bormane.
Yes. But none of that has any place in pasta. Those are the kind of things you drizzle over a piece of beef carpaccio or a piece of thinly sliced raw tuna, or maybe just drizzle on a piece of bread with a little pinch of like flaky salt. That's what those olive oils are for.
Yeah. You don't want to heat those up. You don't want to make a mayonnaise out of it. You're wasting your money.
Yeah. Like, as long as you're popping for real extra virgin, and Costco real extra virgin is perfectly good. Mm-hmm. As long as you're popping for real extra virgin, you don't need to go crazy on the olive oil. Just don't get blended oil. It's not the same thing.
Right.
All right. Well, Nate, speaking of olive oil, why don't you take us through your first pasta dish?
My first pasta dish is aglio olio. It's a Neapolitan dish. It just means garlic and oil. It's something my mother used to make for us on weeknights all the time. It's super easy. Like, I tell people dried pasta is Italian fast food. So aglio olio, there's really no big secret to it. But again, it's about starting with really good ingredients. Like, I would recommend searching out maybe an artisanal pasta for a dish like this, just because it's just so bare knuckles. And when you cook bare knuckles and really elemental, like, every ingredient shines all the more. There is really nothing to hide behind. So I recommend looking for like a Rusticella d'Abruzzo or Latini or Martelli brand. It's worth the extra couple bucks, but if not, go to your old standby DiCecco is just fine. Just like mama does. So the keys to this dish are buying good garlic. What you want to do is, if there's a germ in that garlic, you want to take it out. That little green sprout, that is very acrid and bitter. Do yourself a favor. If there's ever a germ present in your garlic, pluck it out. Now here you can mince it. You can slice it thin or super thin, Goodfella style. It's really up to you. My rule of thumb is about 4 to 6 cloves of garlic for about a cup of olive oil and a pound of pasta.
Okay. So now, that's not a ton of garlic.
No, not a ton. You can go up to 12. It depends on how big of a garlic lover you are. Like, I like garlic, but I don't want it seeping out of my pores. Some people do. In the kitchens that I've been in, we always kind of treated garlic as like this toxic kind of, you know, radioactive ingredient where you got to be really careful. And it's a really good rule of thumb to do that with, you know, because it's just so resinous and oily and it gets on everything. So I've always used garlic with great restraint, but some people love to push the envelope with it.
I think that the American stereotype of Italian cooking is that they like garlic a lot more than they actually do. And they use garlic a lot more than they actually do. And I feel like then the whole emerald add 60 cloves of garlic thing happened and it just got worse. My thought with garlic is if you're doing something that's in a multi-course setting and you go too hard with the garlic, they'll taste the garlic through the next five courses. So for me, if you wanted to have something that featured garlic, put it near the end, or if it's a rustic main course, you know, like just a big plate of quick and dirty pasta and meatballs, you can go a little overboard on the garlic because you're not doing any kind of subtlety. But if you're doing wine pairings and there's a course or two that's coming after, then you don't want to bowl people over with a ton of just acrid, pungent garlic.
Exactly. Yeah. And like, even that reminds me of our staff meal rules too. Like that was like the only staff meal rule was like no garlic. It's just, you don't want the waiters having stank breath. Like they've been doing shots of diarrhea before they go to the table. but yeah, so back to the dish though, it's super easy. Again, we're going to have all these recipes up on Hot Dogs and Caviar Blogspot. But the general rule is just get the best pasta you can find because it's so simple. Maybe try the passoto technique that we talked about. This is a great dish for that. But the key is to get the germ out of your garlic. And another key that a lot of people don't do is always start your garlic in a cold pan. It's going to keep it more subtle. It's not going to burn. You're going to develop more flavor. You're going to get a lot more of the nuances. So what I always do, and that's a trick I learned from Marcella Hazan's cookbook, which we'll talk about. She's pretty much the godmother of Italian American food. She's like the Julia Child of Italian food. I don't know. What do you think, Jesse? Is that accurate? Or
I think absolutely.
Okay. I may have been overstating it because like I love her so much.
No. She is the real deal. Like if you look for a great book on Italian cuisine for the home cook, if it's by Hazan, that's what you want to do. You could probably get them pretty cheap on Amazon. And they are just well-written, straightforward. The recipes work. That's huge when the recipes work.
Yeah. that's always a nice touch.
A surprisingly rare attribute with cookbooks that I've found.
Right. So what you want to do is you want to start your garlic in a cold pan with just some regular, everyday extra virgin olive oil, like we were talking about. You don't need anything fancy. You don't want to, you know, use your good bottle for this. Start it in a cold pan, slowly heat your garlic up. And as it starts to heat up, add a little more oil. Maybe add your oil in like three additions. So you're essentially making a very flavorful garlic oil. And then here you can add chili flakes if you want. Black pepper is really good. But again, use good chili flakes if you got them. They're worth seeking out too. I mean, I love pizza chili flakes. They're, you know, ubiquitous and easy to find all around. But I urge you to try to search out some good pepper flakes too, like Espelette or Aleppo or something that, you know, really kind of take this simple dish, but really make it shine on its own.
You know, at the Asian market, I get these chili flakes, these Szechuan chili flakes. It's not Szechuan pepper. It's just chili flakes from the Szechuan region of China. So it's not that Szechuan pepper flavor. They're just dried chili flakes. They look just like pizza chili flakes. The grind is a little finer, but the flavor is so much more mild, which means you get a lot more red pepper flavor without the heat.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. Like very, very, just because it's simple doesn't mean it has to be boring or uninteresting.
All right. So you're saying you got options when it comes to chili flakes.
Oh yeah, there's definitely more than one kind of pepper out there, that's for sure. But boil your pasta, or if you're cooking it passoto, add the pasta now, add your water. Beautiful. Just toss it up. Some people finish with a little cheese, some people finish with a little chopped parsley. I don't think it's necessary. Some people finish with a little drizzle of olive oil or a little pat of butter. All great things, but talking simple, quick, easy dishes to add to your repertoire, like that's a go-to. for me.
Excellent, man. Thanks. That's great. All right, listeners, that brings us to the conclusion of part one of our two-part presentation, 10 quick and easy pastas from Hot Dogs and Caviar. You can check out the blog, hotdogsandcaviar.blogspot.com, for the companion posts to this episode and the next one that'll have recipes for all the pastas and photos. And by all means, come see us next time. My name is Jesse Sutton. My partner is Nate Whiting. Speakeasy's going to play us out of here. So by all means, check out the next episode. We'll see you then.